everyone, and welcome to The Law Hour, an editorial review. Now, The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about The Law Hour, an editorial review, please visit the webpage, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour brings you important information about law, news, and current events. Stay tuned for tonight's special report on the common law right after this. You know, a $10 pizza has a 38% tax on it. A Budweiser six-pack, 43% tax. A fifth of Jack Daniels is taxed 72%. Now, governments tax us all, and they tax anything that wiggles, moves, or squirms. But what is it that the government does to produce, prepare, or deliver, for which it gets paid 38% for a pizza, 43% for a beer, or 72% for a drink? Does the pizza parlor make 38% profit on that pizza that they have to buy the ingredients to make? They prepare it, they cook it, they serve. They pay rent on the store that you sit in to eat it. Why is it that the government gets paid more in tax than the people who actually produce, prepare, and deliver the goods and services that we all buy? Well, if you'd like more information about tax and status, why don't you call the law school at 417-273-4967. Be sure to ask for the free general law CD package. Now, that's a 4-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. You can call and order yours. The number is 417-273-4967. The school, tax and status, is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you are online, why don't you go to the website, georgegordon.org, click onto the email, and send an email request for that free general law CD package. Do it right now before you forget. georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the common law. Last time we were talking about admiralty. I pointed out to you that admiralty is that jurisdiction that derives from commerce, the Commerce Clause, Article 1, Section 8. And you volunteer for it. That's the best part. Volunteer. Admiralty is the seaman's papers. If you're a sailor or you've ever been in the merchant marine or you've been at sea at all, you know you have to have seaman's papers to go to sea. Well, on land, you have to have your Social Security account number. Social Security is the equivalent of seaman's papers. It's what brings admiralty to everything that we do. It's what gives us the income tax and the Social Security tax. It takes about a third of everything that we create and produce under the Commerce Clause at Article 1, Section 8. And this is what we're taught in college. This is what we're taught in high school, public education. And it makes all the sense in the world. I admire government and government bureaucracy and educators and schools and colleges. I mean, these people are thinking ahead. They wouldn't have jobs and occupations under the common law. See, the common law deals with property and property rights. If Americans dealt in property and property rights, they'd have limited government. And all these millions of jobs that people have, you know, supporting this big monstrosity of a government would be out of work. They'd be unemployed. They'd have to go out and actually work and produce. Instead of standing around the water cooler and shooting the breeze, they'd have to go out and produce food, clothing, and shelter for themselves. So they very craftily suggested to you and me that we needed their services, that we needed this admiralty jurisdiction. Now, they didn't word it that way. But they came along and they said, well, would you like to have these benefits? And they appealed to our lust and greed. And we said, yeah, we'd like to have these benefits. Good. Vote for me and I'll give you these benefits. So we voted for Bob and Bob gave us these benefits. But we have to pay for it with our money. Less the cost of administration. Now, somehow this doesn't add up to me as a businessman that I should hire you to come in here and spend my money out of my checking account and give me 50 cents worth of goods for every dollar that you spend of my money. Seems like to me it would make more sense for me to keep control of my own checkbook, spend my own money, and get 100 cents on the dollar. Now, there has to be an answer to this admiralty. Because if there's no answer to it, then what in the hell are we sitting here talking about it for? Why do you need to talk about and jawbone over and beat your gums about something that there's no solution to? It kind of reminds me of nuclear energy, you know? Years ago, somebody woke up and said, we can't live without a nuclear weapon. We have to have an atomic bomb. We're at war. These are bad guys over here. We need an atomic bomb to blast them back into the Stone Age. And so we developed nuclear energy. Somebody woke up and said, well, this nuclear energy has dual purpose. It can generate electricity. So we build a lot of nuclear power plants, and then somebody woke up and said, oh, God, this nuclear energy is really bad. Let's close down all the power plants. Well, look, boys and girls, the genie's out of the jar. And now the Iranians want to generate electricity with nuclear power. And somebody said the other day, well, my God, they'll build bombs. Well, probably they will. Probably. North Koreans have the bomb. At least that's what they're claiming. Well, now the genie's out of the jar. I didn't let the genie out of the jar. I think we'd all be better off if we'd never figured out how to make a nuclear weapon and never learned how to develop nuclear energy to generate electricity. But, you know, I wasn't invited into that discussion. So you don't have my input into it. And here we are on the chessboard, 2005, and all of a sudden, we got nuclear energy, and we got proliferation going on, and we got George Bush and the neocons telling us that, hey, listen, we got to solve this problem in North Korea and in Iran. I guess the way to do that is with war. Well, okay. I guess that's what we have to do, if that's what we have to do. But Admiralty has an answer. I discovered the answer some years ago, and I woke up to that fact, and I said, well, you know, I guess maybe I ought to implement this, and I did, and I've been happy ever since, and I've been sharing it with others. This isn't for everybody. I might be the first one to jump up and tell you that freedom is not for everybody. And wealth isn't for everybody. You know, Jesus said, the poor you have with you always. And the ignorant you have with you always. And there's certain people that are ignorant, and they're always going to be ignorant. And there's not much you can do for them. There's some people that can learn, and those people won't be ignorant anymore. And there's some people that can be free. And to those people, freedom beckons. Not everybody can be free. Now let's take a look at the answer to admiralty. You know, admiralty is civil law jurisdiction, and once again, common law is not accessible in courts of admiralty, a civil law jurisdiction. Remember, J. Reuben Clark said there is a constant ideological conflict between civil and common law for the control of society. And up to this moment in time, the civil law has won this contest hands down. The civil law is in total control worldwide. Satan has won that game. Now, that doesn't mean that the common law isn't available to any and everybody that wants to participate in it. God himself, the creator, this is the God of Abraham now, says that, you know, if you want to choose the common law, you can do that and you can have its benefits. And I'm going to guarantee it. Now, there's absolutely no jurisdiction in admiralty courts to hear common law issues. It is important to understand that all of our courts today are admiralty courts, so jurisdiction must be challenged even in traffic court. Admiralty has moved from the high tide mark to the mountain peaks of this country, and some Supreme Court justices are aware of that fact, as stated in the following cases. I concur, this is Johnson J. Johnson, in Ramsey versus Allegri, 12 Wall 611, Justice Johnson, U.S. Supreme Court, 1827. I concur with my brethren in sustaining the decree below, but cannot consent to place my decision upon the ground on which they've placed theirs. I think it high time to check this silent and stealing progress of the admiralty in acquiring jurisdiction to which it has no pretensions. Unfounded doctrines ought at once to be met and put down, and dicta, as well as decisions that cannot bear examination, ought not to be evaded and permitted to remain on the books to be commented upon and acquiesced in any courts of justice, or to be read and respected by those whose opinions are to be formed upon books. It affords facilities for giving an undue bias to public opinion, and I will add, of interpolating doctrines which belong not to the law. Now, I have now said a great deal on this subject, and I could not have said less, and discharged the duty which I feel that I owe to my community. I am fortifying a weak point in the wall of the Constitution. Every advance of the Admiralty is a victory over the common law, a conquest gained upon the trial by jury. The principles upon which alone this suit could have been maintained are equally applicable to one half the commercial contracts between citizen and citizen. Once established, the rights here claimed, and it may bring back with it all the Admiralty usurpations of the 15th century. In England, there exists a controlling power. But here, in America, there is none. Congress has indeed given a power to issue prohibitions to a district court when transcending the limits of the Admiralty jurisdiction. But who is to issue a prohibition to us if we should ever be affected with a particularity for that jurisdiction? I, therefore, hold that we are under a peculiar obligation to restrain the Admiralty jurisdiction within its proper limits, that in case of contracts it has no jurisdiction at all in personam except as incident to the exercise of its jurisdiction in rem. Now, previously, under the title of jurisdiction, the Baines case was used to describe the classes of jurisdictions. Judge Baldwin well knew the evils of admiralty when he also said this, quote, "By attempting to introduce the admiralty jurisdiction of the civil law, a foundation is laid for interminable conflicts of jurisdiction between the courts of the state and of the federal government. It is vain to contend that the Seventh Amendment will be any efficient guarantee for the right in suits at common law if an admiralty jurisdiction exists in the United States commensurate with that which is claimed by the claimant in this case. Its assertion is, in my opinion, a renewal of the contest between legislative power and royal prerogative, the common and civil law striving for mastery, the one to secure, the other to take away the trial by jury. Judicial power must first annul the Seventh Amendment, or judicial subtlety transform a suit at common law into a case of admiralty and maritime jurisdiction before I take cognizance of such a case as this without a jury." Now, that was cited from Baines again. Now, admiralty courts have no in personam jurisdiction unless there's first an in rem jurisdiction. Again, quoting from the Ramsey case, I have quoted Craddock's case and Lay and Burley's cases, in which the Court of Admiralty was expressly prohibited from proceeding in personam, especially in behalf of material men. I should think here I have a right to demand it, and from the whole library of law books, and God knows we have enough of them already, camel loads, a single attempt to proceed in personam upon a contract in the Admiralty, except for seamen's wages, since the date of the resolutions of 1682 can be extracted. Adjudged cases cannot be found because since the antique cases to which I have referred, the right has been abandoned. Dicta enough can be produced, and some of those very modern. Godbolt speaks of the process in rem as the only process issuable in the first instance from the Admiralty. And in the addition of Abbott, which I have quoted in a note upon the case of Hoare versus Clement, a case arising on the contract for necessaries, it is admitted that the Court of Admiralty had no jurisdiction over the person in that case. In Johnson versus Shippen, in which a libel was filed against the ship and owners on an hypothecation for money borrowed aboard on her voyage. It was argued that if suit lay against the owners at all, it lay at common law, and a prohibition was granted as to the suit against the owners, but refused as to the vessel. In Ball versus Trelawney, Trelawney had sued in the Admiralty on a foreign contract in personam, obtained judgment, and Ball was in jail. The latter brought his action under the statute of 2 Henry VI, recovered double damages, and was discharged on habeas corpus on the grounds of being in confinement in a cause coram non judis. In Brown, Volume 2, lays down the rule in these terms. The general rule, however, at present is that the Admiralty acts only in rem, and that no person can be subject to that jurisdiction except by his consent, expressed by his entering into a stipulation. I'm going to pause here. This is a series of comments made from a number of cases by our Supreme Court, citing that in personam, Admiralty jurisdiction requires your consent. So why don't you stop consenting? I mean, that's the solution to the problem right there. Stop signing contracts with these foreign and alien gods called government. I mean, if you want your freedom back, if you want the rights, privileges, duties, and immunities that come with a common law freeman, then you stop making contracts. Don't join the Army if you don't want to be under the Uniform Code of Military Justice. Don't get a driver's license if you don't want to be under the traffic code. Don't get a marriage license if you don't want to be under family law. Don't get a business license if you don't want to be under the Commerce Clause. Now, of course, the question arises, well, how in the world are we going to live our lives because it's all we know? Well, I agree with you. That's why I opened this school to teach you how to practice the common law. It's available to us, at least to us Americans. Now, for you Canadians and Australians, I don't know. I can't speak for Australia. I haven't read your constitution. I don't know. But I would suggest to you that under Anglo-Saxon administration, you people are Israelites and you people are protected by the same common law that Moses brought down off of Mount Sinai. Same Ten Commandments. So I would imagine that you have the same provisions of protection that we have in the United States, guaranteed by God Almighty Himself. That doesn't mean I know how to implement them in an Australian court, but I'll just bet you that you can do it if you put your mind to it. But first of all, you're going to have to learn how. And that's what courtroom strategy and procedure is all about. How do you go into court and make claims for rights? Well, number one, you need to resign from the Army. You can't go into claim your rights under your constitution or the common law with a military contract signed, sealed, and delivered in the possession of your opponent. You got to get your discharge first. So the first thing you do is start getting extricated from these contracts that you have created. Your marriage license and birth certificate and all of that's easy enough to do. You can do that by simply making a rescission of contract. Go to Bouvier's Law Dictionary under rescission of contract and tell you how to do that. Now, here in the United States, we teach students how to do those kinds of things to get their capacities back. And right away, somebody's going to say, well, I'll have to give up my Social Security. That's right. You do. You want your freedom, you got to give up the contract that impairs your liberty. Social Security is chief among those contracts. And if you don't want to do that, well, then forget it. You know, as I've said before, you know, ride the back of the bus, fold your hands, sit back and relax and enjoy the ride. You know, people join the Army like Colin Powell. He joined the Army. He was in there for 30 years and he seemed to like it. He seemed to get along all right in there. There are people with that mentality. You know, there are people that have to be told when to get up in the morning, when to go to bed at night, and what to do in between. I had a boy like that. He joined the Army. He was in there 2 terms, 2 hitches. He needed somebody to tell him when to get up and when to go to bed and what to do in between. And he got it in the Army. Then one day he grew up. You know, he said, hell, I think I can do this by myself. I did. I worked for wages for a long time. I needed somebody to tell me when to get up and when to go to bed and what to do in between, and I had that for a number of years, and one day I woke up and I said, hell, I think I can do this by myself. And I went out into the general contracting world and I started doing business. I did it in commerce, of course. Everybody does. Then one day I woke up and said, do I have to do business in commerce and be told when to get up and when to go to bed and what to do in between, or can I do this by myself? And I quit commerce and went into private business. Now, that doesn't mean that everybody can do it, but there's a certain number of you people out there that could if you put your mind to it. So let's take a look at the voyage. Let me describe a hypothetical voyage, an admiralty voyage to you. Let's suppose you're in San Francisco. You're a little short of funds. And you hear about a fantastic voyage on a ship that's about to set sail from port with guaranteed security and profits for all. So you sign up for the voyage. Now, let's also assume that material facts about this voyage are withheld from you. That's in order to induce you to sign up, and that the contemplated voyage was in violation of the positive laws of the law of nations and contrary to the meaning and intent of the United States Constitution. You've been defrauded. So the ship sets sail in the middle of the night when no one is watching from the shore, and after a week at sea, you discover the concealment of these material facts, and you determine that you're on an unlawful or an illegal voyage. So you go to the captain, and you inform him of your newly discovered evidence, and you demand your constitutional and common law rights as a United States citizen. Now, the captain has no jurisdiction to hear common law complaints. The captain's only jurisdiction is under maritime law. The captain's sole responsibility is to ensure the safety of the voyage under maritime law. The captain sees you as a possible threat to the voyage. The captain may fear that you might start influencing other members of the crew, and mutiny might result. To the captain, his duty is clear. He must mete out some degree of punishment to instill in all of the members of the crew a fear of joining in or participating in any action which may jeopardize the voyage or his powers. So therefore, the captain may offer you one of two alternatives. You can go back to work and continue to perform, and I will forgive you this uncontrolled outburst and allow you to remain on this voyage so long as you agree to pay a penalty which I shall determine and impose. That's a fine. Or two, if you refuse these terms, I will order you confined to the brig for the duration of the voyage. You know, that's where you're at when you buy a ticket on an airliner. You know, you want to get on the Carnival cruise, you know, you need to read the fine print in the ticket. And it's going to say that this ship is operating under admiralty law. Boy, you better be familiar with admiralty law. Because, you know, you're out here on the ocean and the captain says no more swimming in the pool, no more shuffleboard, you know, and put out your cigarette. You give him the finger and tell him, no, I'm not going to do that. And then he's going to throw you in the brig. And you may protest. You may say, well, I'm a passenger. Certainly. And you've got a ticket. And the ticket says that you're going to abide by all the rules and regulations of the admiralty law. And how many of you passengers on the ship know anything about admiralty law? Well, you don't. You don't know anything about it, and it never comes up because unless there's some emergency. Now, the other day there was some big storm and some big wave hit one of those cruise ships. I don't know if it killed anybody, but it injured a few people. And, you know, in an emergency like that, if the captain says, you know, start manning the lifeboats and start pumping over here, you don't sit there and say, well, I'm a passenger and I don't have to pump water. I mean, somebody's going to slap you up alongside the head and say, it's time for you to grow up. And that's what happens when you get into martial law. One of these days we'll have martial law here in the United States, military rule, you know, and when that guy comes up and says, hey, you, come here. That's time for you to salute smartly and say, yes, sir. No, sir. And what do I do next, sir? And that's the way the game has to be played. And that's where America is heading, and I suppose that most of the world, according to Matthew 24, is headed for this same great tribulation, this New World Order program. most people in the world don't see that there's any problem with it, and they're, in fact, they're kind of looking forward to the day when we're going to have this fantastic new world order. Now, the captain, remember, has no jurisdiction to hear any common law issues. He can't help you there. So you may have a common law complaint, and if you can never get back to San Francisco, you may have an action against this captain, and you may have an action against the shipping line. But you're out in the middle of the ocean here, partner. You're on the great ship America. You're between destinations. You're on the Titanic, and you're not in Europe, and you're not in America. And this thing is headed toward a field of icebergs out here. What are you going to do about that? And that's where all of us are. I teach a class on subsistence and survival, kind of like old Joseph, you know, back in Egypt in the olden days. He had to store up food, you know, for 7 years. There's going to be some tough times ahead, and there's going to be some changes made in our law. And you're going to need to know how to deal with that. Not a guy write me a letter here one day and he says, it's too late in America. We've already gone into a dictatorship. I don't need to go to your courtroom strategy and procedure school. I thought to myself, well, don't let me tell you what's good for you. You ought to be able to figure that out for yourself. But I was thinking to myself, I said, you know, in Nazi Germany in 1943, when the Gestapo comes and knocks on your door and hauls you off to police headquarters, it would seem like to me that if there was ever a time in your life that you needed to know something about courtroom procedure, would be now in front of this Nazi judge in this Nazi court. That in reality, legal knowledge is more valuable in a dictatorship going into a dictatorship than it would be in normal times. Because in normal times, you don't have a problem. It's in these extraordinary times under martial law. Kind of like in 1863, I believe it was, the Union Army came into Missouri and they vacated all of the counties bordering on Kansas. There was an insurrection going on over there. So they just came up to people in those tier of counties over there and they said, okay, get out. And if we catch you in this county, we'll shoot you on sight. Now that's military law. That's in America. That's in America under our Constitution, 1863, during the Civil War. And those people lost their farms and their livestock and everything that they had. It would seem like to me that knowing a little something about law would be kind of important right about that point in time. Prior to the Civil War, they didn't need to know about it. After the Civil War, it wasn't important again. But it seems like right then during the Civil War, knowing and understanding admiralty and equity and common law and rights and military rules and military law would seem to be pretty handy right about there. And that's why we teach courtroom strategy and procedure. This guy says, I don't need to know that. It's too late now. Why, we've got a dictatorship here. Well, that's true. Yeah, America is degenerating into an authoritarian dictatorship. We'll have a democratic dictatorship. You get to choose the dictator that rules over you. It's kind of special, isn't it? So I'm kind of glad that I know a little something about law and about how to talk to judges when I walk into the courtroom and how to deal with prosecutors and policemen and what rights I have, both under the civil and the common law. I need to know about the Uniform Code of Military Justice. I need to know how to code plead out the UCMJ, because even a soldier in the Army has rights. They may not be inalienable rights. They may be statutory, but he still has those rights. And if he knows how to apply them, if he knows how to look them up, I mean, you got rights out here that you don't even know how to find at high noon with both hands and a roadmap. Don't you think that it would be advantageous for you to learn what those rights, privileges, and immunities are, even if you're coming into an admiralty court? I mean, I do business in admiralty courts from time to time. I don't have any great complaint about them. I don't go knock on the door and say, gee, can I get into this admiralty court? I just can't wait. But, you know, once in a while I get hauled in there and I need to know what to say to this guy. I need to know what to say to the judge. How do you want to plead? Guilty or not guilty? What would non-assumpsit do? No, we don't take that plea in here. Well, gosh, where does this court get its jurisdiction? Could we make a plea to the jurisdiction under Rule 22B6, Judge? Oh, Rule 22B6. Well, yeah, I guess you could make a plea to the jurisdiction. Okay. Well, let me tell you, I don't have a ticket. I was kidnapped and put on this ship against my will and over my objection. And I've got a complaint against the captain. I mean, you know, that could go a long ways, you know, if you ever got into a jam like that. Now, you really have no alternative. You have no recourse while the vessel is at sea. Once you reach port somewhere in the United States, you may have an action. So after the Civil War, those people that were deprived of their property in those counties then came back into court and sued the U.S. government under a takings claim in the Court of Claims, and they got paid for all their land and cattle and losses. They got paid in spades. Wouldn't that be kind of handy? You know, I can't prevent the government from taking the property. Wouldn't it be kind of handy if I knew how to go into court and get it back? Maybe I can't prevent the guy in the airport from causing me these damages, but maybe I could get compensation for it after the fact. Now, you could file a common law action in a court of competent jurisdiction if you could find one. It's called the U.S. Court of Claims. However, the only issue that court could hear would be one involving fraud, and fraud is not easy to prove. Besides, there are no common law courts in the United States today. Well, that's not quite true. There are common law courts in the United States, but the U.S. District Court is one, but you have to be a common law free man to access it. And I don't know of very many of those guys running around. The U.S. Court of Claims will defend your property. That's a common law court. It's a property court. And you also have them in your state courts when you have a takings action. Somebody in government goes beyond his constitutional authority and takes your property or causes you a damage. You've got a remedy there. The only place left for you to file an action is with an admiralty court, and there is a court of admiralty jurisdiction in every state to hear these issues. Did it ever occur to you that maybe you're in the wrong court? Did it ever occur to you that maybe you need to be in the right court with the right issue at the right time? Maybe the Admiralty Court is the right court for you to go into if you want to argue fraud or a violation of the Uniform Code of Military Justice. You know, Admiralty would be the place to go make that claim. Now, oftentimes students will come here to school and they're complaining about some governmental action. Then they file a civil rights action, or they want to file a civil rights action. So I always ask, well, why would you do that? And I don't know. Well, if you don't know, well, then why would you file it? I mean, shouldn't you know what you're doing before you do it? Why would you want to commit yourself to an action that's going to take 3 or 4 years and then find out 3 or 4 years from now that it was the wrong action? Don't you think you should find that out before you get involved in the action? Makes more sense to me. Wild new concepts coming forth here. Hang on. We're at the halfway point here. I need to remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law School is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to the website georgegordon.org. Simple enough, georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. And the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. You can be a Catholic, Protestant, or Jew and attend school here. And it's open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you don't want to go to school, you can do it at home, homeschool. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on the website, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. So if you want this series of programs, you can download this entire series of programs, 7 days, 7 programs. Off the Internet, in radio quality, format, 32-bit, right on your computer. It's the way they do it in the big league. And if you can't handle that kind of quality, well, you can do it in 16-bit, which is stereo quality. That's pretty good. It's not bad quality either. A little better than radio. I used to be on radio quite a bit. And when I put these programs on radio, it was down at 8-bit. Well, I got complaints from people that couldn't even hear me. So I said, well, we got to fix that. So we changed our format. And now you can listen to these programs. You can put these programs on compact disc, put your own library together. As I'm sitting here in the studio, I'm looking up on the shelf up there, and all the programs that I've done are sitting on compact disc in little file cases up there. And now they're on the internet by title and date. So if you know the date of a program, all you have to do is go to the webpage, and then it'll tell you how to download it and or the title. You know, this is the Common Law. So if you were to punch in the Common Law, it would bring you up to this series of programs. And you can sit there and download them, and they're free, and you get them in 32 or 16-bit, whichever you prefer. And then if you want to rebroadcast this at some later date on your own radio station, you can do that, and it's free. Anything like that. You get free programming, and the law is carried worldwide now over the internet. Remember, we're heard on the internet, or we're archived on the internet by title and date. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. One last item here: the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on the program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of the network or of this radio station, but they should, shouldn't they? For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, just go to the webpage, georgegordon.org, or call the law school at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the answer to admiralty. If you don't have a solution to the problem, you don't need to know what the problem is. Now, we've been talking about the problem, so let's take a look at the solution to it. Now, you can file an action in admiralty. Knowing how to file an action in admiralty is kind of crucial, isn't it? Now, where the proper issues are against the unlawfulness of the voyage itself, or from its inception, pursuant to the positive law of the Law of Nations, all issues will address the subject of jurisdiction based on the fact that the voyage, the quasi-contract, was a nullity ab initio. Now, you could have a proper cause of action filed in a court of competent jurisdiction, going into the U.S. Federal District Court under a civil rights action is the proper course of action. I've collected money there. Many of my students have collected money. Hundreds of thousands of dollars collected under the Civil Rights Act or tort claims by students that have gone to this law school. And knowing what court to go into is kind of crucial. You go into the wrong court, you get dismissed out, you lose. You lose. I don't know how many people have called me and complained about our judicial system because they sued and they lost. They couldn't win. They couldn't prevail. Couldn't get their court dates. They couldn't get a hearing. Couldn't get a trial. Well, that's understandable. You know, you got more than one court to go to. You got admiralty, you got equity, and you got common law. You got property rights, and you've got equitable interests, and then you've got just plain equity. You got contract law, and you're going to have to go into the right court with the right issues. And then you got to be able to prove your case when you get there. And you need to learn how to do that. You're entitled to a remedy. Anytime you suffer a damage, you're entitled to a remedy. Knowing how to get that remedy is crucial. You can have an issue and then lose simply because you're in the wrong court. Simply because you can't prove your case. Simply because you don't know the rules of court. Now remember, the possibilities are truly pregnant because we can prove several violations of the general maritime law of all nations which are developed to protect the merchants and enhance commerce, and which are laws that all maritime courts in the world are bound by. Now, the same people who said, give us the Federal Reserve Charter, and we will see that there is stability to our economy, forced us into a recession in 1921 by a contraction of the Federal Reserve requirements of the fractional reserve to the various banks. This contracted the money supply, and by increasing the reserve requirement from 15% to 20%. A huge liquidity squeeze was forced in 1929, which brought on the Great Depression. This precipitated our inability to pay off the interest on the debt to the Federal Reserve. So as a result, in 1933, Congress entered the United States into bankruptcy by the suspension of the payment of debt in gold as mandated by House Joint Resolution 192. House Joint Resolution 192. Bankruptcy. That's what that was. This was one act, or this one act terminated national federal common law. It breached the floodgates which held the maritime law at the tidelands with the ebb and flow of the tide, and it permitted maritime admiralty law and its jurisdiction to sweep over the American people. You're no longer, we Americans, from 1933 to 1986, we're no longer able to pay our debts at law with gold coin. We could pay our debts at law with silver coin. We could pay our debts at law with foreign coin. But, you know, the average Joe Sixpack, he doesn't see any reason why he shouldn't pay his debts with his credit card, for crying out loud. He's so far out of touch with reality, so far out of touch with law, that he thinks credit cards represent money. And they represent credit. And it's all because we substituted the payment of debt in lawful gold with a discharge of debt under limited liability in maritime. Discharge versus payment. Limited liability, insurance, and maritime. What we have in lieu of lawful money are now Federal Reserve notes of an insurance underwriting scheme that is a Tontine wagering scheme, just like the structure of the George Rapp Harmony Society, and just like the early Tontine insurance programs. That's what we're involved in. Now, Rapp's communistic religious society, which was operated for economic profit, the insurance companies and the Federal Reserve are all the same in their operation, as in each include the following. They have a pool of assets. They have limited liability, which is insurance. They have a policy of survivors take all, which is called a wagering policy, Tontine. There's no accountability to the members or the subscribers. Property is pledged to the pool, and forfeiture is the penalty for withdrawal. Yeah, when you withdraw from Social Security, you're going to pay a penalty. Did you know that? You're going to lose everything you put into it. That's the bad news. The good news is you don't have to throw any more good money after bad. These are choices that people need to make. And I'm not here to tell you what choice to make. I'm just here to tell you that there's choices for you to make. If you want to make the choice, then what you do is get on the webpage and ask for that free general law CD package. That's the place to start. And let me tell you what these choices are. You know, what? Here's what your cause and effect is. You're complaining about OSHA, the EPA, State Tax Commission, these various and sundry agencies over here. Well, you signed up for them. No OSHA inspector ever came into your plant unless there was a signed contract someplace that invited him in. Now, I've been here on this farm operating this private business for 20 years and never had a problem with a government agent. Not one. Not a single problem. I operated in the commercial realm of a business and public business for 20 years before that, and I had nothing but problems. I had one agent after another knocking on my door doing this, that, and another thing. Of course, I signed the contracts, and I invited them all in. Once I stopped inviting them in, once I stopped signing the contracts, the problems just disappeared. Now, a guy called me here one time. He was from Texas. I think he's in prison now. He called and he said, well, I'm not going to pay this tax anymore. I'm not going to pay this withholding tax. And I said, well, I think that's a mistake. He had a corporation. He was operating in trade, commerce, business, and industry. And he got into this tax protest movement. And one day he just woke up and said, I'm not paying it anymore. And the last thing I heard, they arrested him, took him to jail, prosecuted him, and sent him off to prison. Now, this poor guy is guilty as hell. I mean, no doubt he did all these things they said. But he never understood what caused his problem. And that's what I call the tragedy. Most of you people listening to my voice right now are victims, but you don't know you're a victim. There's a solution to your problem, but you don't know what the solution is. You've been educated in public school. You haven't got a clue as to find out, as to how you would find out what the solution to your problem is. And you've been prejudiced against the Ten Commandments in favor of the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. You've been converted into practicing communists and love it. And then you complain about the tyranny that's imposed upon you. It's almost like being caught in the clutches of a boa constrictor who's opened his mouth and is about to swallow you whole, alive. He's going to swallow you alive and swallow you whole. You can see what's about to happen to you, but you don't know what caused it, you don't know what to do about it, and you're helpless and can't figure out a solution. Now, that's why we have the law school. This is a private law school. This isn't open to the public. The law school is not open to the public. That's why it's private. If it was open to the public, it would be a public school. And because it's not open to the public, it's private, so it's by invitation. So you have to contact me and be invited, and I don't invite everybody. That's why it's private, and that's why the government doesn't control it. And if I were to open it to the public, then it would be public, and then the government would control it. And that's simple enough to figure out, isn't it? So if you want to deal privately, then you have to deal in privacy. Does that make sense? If you want to be private, you got to deal in privacy. I mean, how much more obvious can you be? Now, if you want to deal publicly, you go to the bank and open a bank account. That's pretty public. It's open to everybody. There's nothing private about your bank account, nothing private about the business connections that you have in the bank. There's nothing private about the business transactions of General Motors or Ford or any of its employees. That's why there's identity theft. That's because all of the information that you have is out there in the public. That's why they got it. Nobody is stealing George Gordon's identity. None of it's public. It's all private. Nobody knows anything about it. Except me. And I ain't talking. That's what the Fourth Amendment was all about. The Fourth Amendment is there to protect your person, houses, papers, and effects, boys and girls. Person, houses, papers, and effects. Now, you can either have that privacy or you can have it publicized. Most people sign contracts and take employment, and everything they do is transparent. Everything is out there for everybody to see. So some guy comes along, takes your Social Security number. How does he get your Social Security number? Well, isn't that on your driver's license? Isn't that what you showed to the clerk over here when you cashed a check? Isn't your Social Security number on your checks? You know, with your Social Security number and a computer program, I can get your life history. Right here in the privacy of my own office. We've got computer programs here that just open up everybody's life. We'll show people that when they come to school here. It just dumbfounds them. So I didn't know that was out there. and every piece of information that's available is public. And you gave it to somebody. And they wrote it down. You gave it to an insurance company. All the information that you gave to your life insurance company is available to me. All the information that you gave on your credit application, you know, to Target stores or to some consumer credit outfit is available to me. I can get it. Then I can take on your identity and go out here and cash your checks. So to remedy that, one of these days the government's going to come along and say, we got to have national identification. They're moving in that direction. We got to have RFID tags, radio frequency identification tags in your passports. It's coming. Congress has proposed that. They'll be in your driver's license here pretty shortly. They will have you marked and bound like a cow in a herd on a feedlot. If that's what you want, you know you're on the right track. If that isn't what you want, then maybe what you should be thinking about is my free general law CD package. And let's see if we can't extricate you from this morass of government regulation and the civil law. And I ain't talking about Jesus loves you and he's willing to take you back. I'm just talking about common sense. You know, like the seventh commandment, thou shalt not steal, or the eighth commandment, thou shalt not steal. And you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag, in Deuteronomy 25, and you know, privacy, Fourth Amendment, you know, you have a right to be protected in your person, houses, papers, and effects, and, you know, Public Law 97-280, Statute 96-12-11, and the Supreme Court decisions, you know, in Wickard versus Filburn, Hale versus Hinkle, and Seeger versus United States. And, you know, you start putting these together with the First Amendment, and pretty soon, you know, you got a cohesive, intelligent plan that's recognizable in the courts of the United States and Canada and Australia. And you can walk in and say, well, you know, I used to be a sailor. I used to be on a maritime adventure. And one day I decided that wasn't good. And when my enlistment in the Navy expired, I didn't reenlist. And now I'm a free man. And I'm maintaining myself in a different status than I was when I was a sailor or a soldier in the Army. You know, you can do that. But while you're a soldier in the Army, don't give the finger to the sergeant. Wait until you get your discharge. A lot of times I have students that come in here and they just can't wait. They get evangelistic zeal. I mean, they find out about freedom and they say, well, this is for me. And this guy's still got Social Security, income tax, he's got liabilities, he's got contracts with banks. This guy is just buried like a fly in a spider's web. He's just bound and roped with all this web around him. And he gets evangelistic zeal and says, God, there's freedom outside this web. Well, partner, your first job is to get free from this web. That spider, that government's got you bound up. This is not the time to give that spider the finger and get him ticked off at you. In the George Rapp Society, people and property were pledged to the pool. In Tontine, premium payments were pledged to the pool. In the Federal Reserve, premium payments, people and property are pledged to the pool. Did you know that? Yeah, you're pledged to the pool. That's what the national debt's all about. You're an underwriter. You're a surety underwriter of the U.S. national debt. I used to be. I decided that wasn't a very good program. Especially with George Bush out here adding more and more to the debt every year. I mean, he's just spending your money like it's going out of style. I thought, you know, I don't think I want George Bush to be a guardian over me. I think I need a different guardian. Maybe George Gordon would be a pretty good guardian for George Gordon. I know it's a wild new idea. But, you know, mull it over a little bit. Maybe it'll make some sense to you. So, remember, this premium pool, you know, this Federal Reserve is a surety underwriter scheme. In the Federal Reserve, it's Social Security, unemployment premiums, property tax, etc. For example, what happens if you withdraw from Social Security or from unemployment insurance or stop paying property taxes? Isn't forfeiture demanded? Yeah, you gotta forfeit it. In the George Rapp Society, it was labor interest and the intransmissibility of property to your heirs. That's what happens under Social Security. You put your money in there, but you don't transmit that to your heirs or your estate. In Tontine, it was the premiums and the interest thereon. In the Federal Reserve, it's Social Security and unemployment premiums. Well, in the Rapp Society, List's national economy was practiced on a small scale. In the Federal Reserve System, List's national economy is regulated in controlling our economy today. It's nationwide. You have this nationwide Ponzi scheme. This thing would be illegal if it were being practiced in any local institution, but it's been institutionalized nationally by our Congress. It's insane, but you know, people have signed up for it. They believe in it. They love it. I think it's the greatest thing since sliced white bread. From time to time, I put on a program here and we talk about the economics of it. One of these days, I'll take a look at Social Security for you and I'll show you the economics of Social Security. Anybody that can count can see that Social Security takes more than it gives you back. Now, if you think you need a program that you pay $2.73 into to get a dollar back, well, join up. Social Security is the program for you. If you think that if you produce $2.73 and you could spend that $2.73 on yourself, by yourself, in your own self-interest, well, that's another problem. That's another opportunity. Why don't you mull that over? Because especially you professional people, you know, if you're making $100,000 a year or more, you're paying in the maximum rate. You're paying in $12,000 a year. In 40 years, you're going to pay in $500,000, and you're going to get $100,000 of it back, maybe, if you're lucky. Maybe. And the $100,000 you get back are going to be depreciated dollars. I mean, the 100-cent dollars you were paying in 1980 are now worth 50 cents today, just 25 years later. 1980 dollars are worth 50 cents. You go back to 1930, 35, those dollars you were paying in 35 today are worth 3.5 cents. So you're going to get back a total number of dollars, which is going to be 20% of what you pay in, and then the value of those dollars may be, well, you know, 50 cents on the dollar. Is that a program for you? You really believe, honest to God, that you need something like that? Hey, there are ignorant people out there that probably need a program like that, but one day I learned how to count, and I woke up and said, no, I don't think I need that. I think I can figure that out for myself. So I had paid in $12,000 into Social Security by the time I quit. Now it's $12,100 dollars. Well, 100% dollars, you know, at the time I put them in. Compared to today, they were probably worth 3-4 times as much as they are today. In today's dollars, that $12,000 is probably around 50. But I paid that in. I forfeited that. I lost it. It's gone. I don't get it back. But from the time I left Social Security until the time that I could have retired in 2002 or 2003, I would have paid in another $141,000. So I saved $141,000 by cutting my losses at 12. And you can do the same thing. And in the long haul, I invested that $140,000 into something else, and I'm getting paid back pretty handsomely. I'm just happy as a clam at high tide. I don't have a complaint in the world. I'm not complaining about Social Security, the IRS, the income tax, the FBI, the Patriot Act, or Homeland Security. Just, you know, if that's what you people want to buy, get with it and get into it. But I didn't want to buy it, so I dropped out. And you can do the same, but you need to learn how. Don't get evangelistic zeal. Give the sergeant the finger before you get your discharge from the Army, or it's going to hurt real bad. Hurt real bad. So remember this, that in the RAP society, it was labor interest and intransmissibility of property to their heirs, which is the Social Security program. In the Federal Reserve, it's Social Security, unemployment premiums, property tax, and so on. For example, what happens if you withdraw from Social Security or from unemployment insurance, or you stop paying your property taxes? You lose what you paid in. That's all. Now, of course, if you're 80 years old and you've been on Social Security for 10 or 15 years and it's the only income you got, hey, listen, partner, you better stick with the program that you got. You don't have much time left. If you're anybody else and you can decide for yourself, you know, if you're 35, 40, 50 years old and you say, hey, listen, maybe economically this would be more advantageous for me to go back and practice the common law and deal in property than it would be in profit and pay tax. Hey, I got to leave it right there. We'll be back with a conclusion to this program on the common law tomorrow night when we come back. Meanwhile, I need to remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about the Gordon Law School and The Law Hour, please go to the website, georgegordon.org. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, go to the homeschooling page at the website, georgegordon.org. And the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the law school direct, 417-273-4967. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Well, we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, for the conclusion on the common law. So until then, good night, friends.